Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and I thank you all for joining me. And for this episode, we are going to visit Floyd and Betty's Lakeside Supper Club in Bearjaw, Minnesota, with today's guest, the award-winning, best-selling author, J. Ryan Stradel, for his brand new book, Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. Now, listeners, you all know J. Ryan Stradel as the author of two terrific, amazing bestsellers, book club selections, Kitchens of the Great Midwest, and The Lager Queen of Minnesota. J. Ryan Stradel, thank you for making Merrick Library's Top Shelf a stop on your book tour. I am so thrilled to host you. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much, Carol Ann.
Of Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club, best-selling author Roxane Gay says, this is a perfect book. I mean, I don't think I need to share another review after that because I wholeheartedly agree. And just this week, the book was featured in People Magazine as a best new book. Listeners, hold on to your hats. This book is just so beautiful and it is something so special. I will stop talking. J. Ryan, if you wouldn't mind, please tell listeners about this book.
Wow. It's hard to follow that. Can you just keep talking, Carol Ann? Sure. Thank you. It's the story of a restaurant that gets passed through four generations. That's an oversimplification. I mean, a supper club is a pretty special kind of Midwestern restaurant that's always family owned and operated. Gives you free food right when you walk in. Often has entertainment. So it's really an event space, and it's a third space for people outside of work and home where they can hang out with their family and friends for an indefinite period of time. It's not the kind of restaurant where they wave the bill under your nose after an hour. It's a kind of place where you go and hang out and see and be seen and catch up. And you can go there after a day of fishing or to celebrate an anniversary. Yeah, it's both formal and informal. It's probably the best food in the area. Certainly the best value. And they always have a full bar, so you can make a real night out of it. And it's a story of that kind of restaurant passed through generations that are not always enthusiastic about inheriting a restaurant or working in one. And between families that also have different imperatives. The third generation that inherits the restaurant, my character Mariel, who's the main character, marries into a family of people that own a chain of homestyle diners like a Denny's or a Perkins or a Bob Evans. And have to reconcile what future are our children going to have? Are they going to go into the more financially secure realm of chain restaurants, or are they going to stick with this struggling little mom and pop? You know, not to oversimplify it or to make it sound like it's some kind of wholesome scrappy dog story, because it isn't. You know, it's a comforting book, but it tackles some pretty heavy issues, be warned. You know, miscarriage, family loss, death. You know, it's four generations. These things happen. But ultimately, it was the story I wanted to read. I wrote it during the pandemic when I couldn't go to a restaurant at all. This was the restaurant I created to go to every day in my imagination. I love it. I wish it existed in real life. And this is as close as I could get. It's dedicated to my son, who was born right before the pandemic in December 2019. He was born while I was writing this book. And so much of my experiences of becoming a father for the first time and issues I dealt with concerning that are in this book too, including our long struggle to conceive him. Both my partner and I struggled with fertility, so he was conceived via IVF, and I put that in the book too. You know, I thought, you know what, I've never read about this in a novel, at least from a man's perspective. I thought, I want to tell this story, because I felt a little less alone when I encountered stories that reflected this experience, since it's so isolating to deal with infertility. It felt such a lonely place to be. That's in the book too. But the book, I think, is also funny as hell. It made me laugh so much while writing this book. There's a whole section of the book where Florence, Mariel's mom, expects to be picked up from church. And Mariel doesn't make it in time. And Florence says, you know, I'll just wait. I'll just keep waiting. And, wait. And she waits for 3 months.
Appreciate everything you're saying about the personal aspects of this book. And I think that's why it's resonating with so many readers. I think that's why it's going to resonate going forward with all of the new readers. And to your point about these generational things that are happening, there is a line that comes early on. There's no destiny like the one you make yourself. which is equal parts inspirational and terrifying, right? Because as evidenced throughout the book, every choice that is made, the choices are relatable. These choices affect future generations, and that past choice affects us today, the ones that we make today. So how you put that on the page is a gift for us. I don't know how you did that. It gave me such pause. It gave me hope. It gave me trepidation. I thought, you know, every choice that we make has an effect later on. And I never realized that to that degree until you read something like Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. And also, speaking of supper clubs, I actually feel like I'm missing out because in Brooklyn, we didn't really have any supper clubs. I mean, we had family Italian restaurants. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Pretty close in a lot of ways. Yeah. In terms of like, there's the owner. You know, how often do you get to say that anywhere? You walk into a building and go, hey, that's the owner. I'll ask the owner, you know, and you have that opportunity to develop a relationship rather than just a series of transactions. You know, when you become a regular at the place, it means you're developing a friendship that's consequential and community-based and resonates. I mean, you can be a regular anywhere. I mean, I know plenty of people that are regulars at Starbucks, but there's something special about a locally owned, locally operated place and its resonance and significance within a community. And yeah, it's increasingly rare. And it's super rare for a business to last almost 100 years like the Lakeside does. Rarer still for a restaurant too. So I wanted to write about these places since, you know, they're not making many more of them. I did hear that one of the more famous supper clubs in Wisconsin, the Turks Inn that was in Hayward, Wisconsin, closed some time ago, relocated to a borough of New York City using a lot of the same trappings. But you know, under new ownership, no longer family run by the same family that ran the Turks Inn. But nonetheless, the milieu had enough appeal that it was moved like like the London Bridge to Lake Havasu City.
Well, I'll be checking that out.
Remote location.
I'll be checking that out and putting my photos on Instagram so listeners can see what that experience is like for me when I do that. The inspiration for the book, was it the supper clubs that came first? Was there a particular character that shows up for you first? Was it Florence or Marielle or Ned? Was there somebody in particular?
Marielle showed up first. She was the first character I wrote. This is pretty rare, but the first chapter you read is the first one I wrote.
That was my question. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. And then I wrote all of Marielle. So Marielle doesn't reappear in the book until later. You get this first chapter as a teaser. You hear other people's stories for a while before you get back to Mariel. But I wrote Mariel's story front to end first. And then I wrote Florence's front to end. And then I wrote Ned's front to end. Then Julia's front to end. And then I decided how to fit them all together later on. But yeah, I sat down with Mariel and I knew she was going to have this encounter with a mother who's not merely passive aggressive, but record setting in that realm. Yeah. And I thought, you know, this is, I wanted to write a funny book. Like, the book ended up becoming a lot deeper in ways I didn't expect when I began writing it. But that's where it started with this relationship between this mother and daughter that just illustrated to me the depths of Midwestern stubbornness.
And that generational stubbornness then carries through as we
absolutely
just, it becomes learned behavior on the offspring, right? So we all learn how to be as stubborn or as not, as the case may be. And I was going to say that because there's so many generations of this family, I was wondering how you did that. Did you write somebody first and write that all the way through? And because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, did he have like a storyboard like Carrie in Homeland where he's got the string connecting relatives to relatives, mm-hmm. you know, with pictures and all these other things? So it's interesting to hear that you meshed that all together. And then with each storyline, the incidental characters that come in, like, well, there's no spoilers here, but the Al's and the Archies, were they always there? Was either one of them or other characters a separate storyline, or you kept them to the side and then incorporated them later?
They were all within the timeline of whoever the point of view character was. Yeah, I do retcon my work where, like, I knew that when I introduced Archie, he was going to have to come back later. And so, like, for example, he initially wasn't in the Muriel chapters or the Ned chapters as he appears in this book. But once I wrote the Florence chapter and revised it, I knew like, oh, well, OK, I've got to go back and work on those other pieces I've written already and include him. So he resonates. So that's a great question. Yeah, I've always written out of order, though. When I sit down to write a book, I just start with whatever I'm most enthusiastic about. I find that guides me pretty well. I wake up in the morning and I think, oh, I need a character, you know, to do this. And, oh, that's not the character I've been writing this week. I have to wait. No, don't wait. Follow the enthusiasm. I think that's generally good advice in the literary realm, period. Like when seeking an agent or a publisher or trying to decide what bookstore you're going to read at, follow the enthusiasm. And stem to stern.
Yeah, as listeners know, I will tell you, follow my enthusiasm for Saturday night at the Lakeside Supper Club, because it is over the top. When I finished the book, I was so sad it was over. And my emotional response was so palpable. Of course, I go back and I read the first two chapters just to see how you got us to the last page. And it was such a rewarding thing to go back and read those first two chapters, Mariel's and Florence. And I thought, well, it is so beautifully done on the page. I will keep saying that. I'm probably repeating myself, but that narrative to get us from A to B is just, it's stunning. Entertainment Weekly has dubbed you the king of Midwestern novels, which is another reason why your book resonates with so many readers. For me as a New Yorker, I can armchair travel. I can go to these supper clubs. I can go to Bear Jaw and live with these people and drive and hopefully not hit a deer and do all of those things and get some steak and chocolate pie and all of that. I know that you live not in Minnesota anymore, and you're living in California, and you wrote the book during the pandemic. So were you in California when you wrote, or were you back home in the Midwest?
I was in California. Yeah. So I really had to rely on my own memory and interviews conducted via email or phone to put this book together in terms of describing its sensory details. Yeah. Yeah. I also had an infant. Became a father in December 2019. So right before the pandemic. So my partner, Brooke, was working full time. So I was also the stay-at-home dad. And infants sleep a lot, which is helpful when you're writing a book. But when they're awake, yeah, it's all hands on deck. There's no like bouncing the baby on your lap and writing a novel. It's like it's baby or book, you know. So for the 10 hours or so a day that he was up, I was with him, and the other 14 hours, if I wasn't sleeping, you know, I did try to nap sometimes when he napped. That's not bad advice. I was writing. It was a lot. And, you know, as it was for everyone. But it was especially hard writing about restaurants, knowing that the only restaurant I could reasonably describe well was the one in my imagination that I went to every day. But it was also aspirational in that regard. Like, I really missed eating out. And so, well, at the very least, I get to write about it all the time.
When you're writing, is there one character that you had that was a favorite? Was there someone that you just said, oh my gosh, I love this person so much? I mean, we talked off mic about two of my favorites, but was there one that just, oh gosh, you know.
Mariel's my mom. Like, she's like 80% my mom, which was, you know, my mom's in all my books. She passed away in 2005, long before I published a novel, like a year before I first published a short story. But she'd always wanted to be a novelist herself. And when I think about notions of legacy, I think about that a lot. I'm having my mom's career for her. And I think I'm also writing about the kinds of people she would have written about, and certainly the milieus that she knew and appreciated. So that's a very important character to me. The easiest character for me to write by far was Florence. Florence just leapt out of my skull like Athena, just fully armed and ready for battle. Like, Florence is ready to go. Like, she just spoke to me. Talk about having a voice in your head.
She has a sword and a shield, right?
Exactly. Having Florence's voice in your head is kind of tough, but, you know, nonetheless, it's unmistakable. I knew when Florence's point of view was making itself known. But my favorite chapters of the book are Julia's. I friggin' love those chapters. They came out longer than I thought. I intended them to be kind of a short epilogue, because the book ends when it ends, kind of. It's like one of those Lord of the Rings movies. Like, is this the ending? No. Yeah, and Julia gets the last 40 pages to herself. I intended it to be closer to 20, but I just loved her too much. And she had a lot to say. I really wanted to give her a fair shake and have her not just be the closing credits music. But I wanted her to have a whole suite to herself. And I'm grateful she did, because her voice also came out of me in a really unmistakable way. Her, like, the way I've written her is some of the most peaceful writing I've ever done. Talk about someone who's just at home with herself and has a really discreet and distinctive notion of her identity and how to describe it. I just went with it. It was a really rewarding couple chapters to write. I love that character so much. I love her point of view. And it was tough watching her make the decisions she did. I didn't always agree with them. I went like, oh man, you're just going to, all right, okay, that's what you're going to do? Okay, you know, but she knew who she was. And she also, like myself, lives in the shadow of a dead parent and really strongly considered that person's wishes and dreams when setting out to do what they did.
And the way you have this all structured for the reader, when I got to that last page, I thought, oh my gosh, please tell me there's more. And I just don't have the rest of the chapters in this galley. Where are the rest of them? I almost emailed the publisher and said, please tell me there's like 6 more chapters left.
Yeah.
They're like, Carolyn, leave us alone. I know we are running short on time, and I know that this book tour is going to just be a massive for you. And by the time this comes out, a lot of the events will have already occurred. But for listeners who want to follow along with pre-recorded events, events they may have missed, what's the best place to find out about your events?
Oh, my website, jryanstraddle.com. I stay on top of it. I update the events like these days every day. But yeah, the events list is accurate. I've got a calendar as well that has more details, including reservation links for places that have advanced tickets. But yeah, that's it. And hopefully I'll come to New York. I don't currently have it on the calendar, but I hope to.
Well, maybe we should meet at that supper club that's now on.
Absolutely.
Let's figure that out. Before I let you go, any recommendations, book recommendations, not that you have had any time at all, that you would like to share with listeners?
Oh, you've brought her up already off camera, I think, but Meg Howery's latest book, They're Gonna Love You, that's set in New York. It's phenomenal. There's not a hair out of place in that book. She's got such a great story. This is a woman who doesn't even have a college degree, and she's one of the best writers I know.
Beautiful. She has been a guest on the show. Beautiful, beautiful writing. Love this book. I have kept every single humorous line out of this interview because I want readers to get there on their own. J. Ryan Stradle, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf Podcast. I hope you'll join me for whatever comes next, and maybe it'll be in one of those boroughs at that supper club. Who knows?
I hope so. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well you're so welcome, Carol Ann. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much. This has been one of my favorite interviews in a long time.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right, you go on. Have a great rest of the day and good luck on this tour. This book is phenomenal.
Thank you so much, Carolyn.
I will share all the links on the podcast page for this episode. Today's book, Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club by today's guest, J. Ryan Stradle, is on shelves right now. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore. Listeners, I want to thank all of you for joining me today. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library, check out our website at merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmere, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and on to the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.